I need to take a drink of water.
I will never not crack up at your enormous hydration station. And it's so great. And like, we should all be so hydrated. But like, every time you pull it out, it's like a cannon. Like,
no. I had to get, so this is a 64 ounce one.
Whoa.
And you can technically take any size through the airport, but I did size down. You may have seen it in the stories if anyone's listening. I sized down to a 40 ouncer that it doesn't take up as much space, but I'm so committed to my emotional spare water bottle.
I love it. I love it. You would have made that TSA agent's head explode if he'd also seen the 64 ounce. He'd be like, what are you smuggling?
I think he would have been suspicious at that point. So if you can't tell, I'm back with Hallie Sutton wearing the coolest shirt ever. For people who are listeners, it says I'm with her, and it's Eileen. Is it Wuornos?
Wuornos, yeah, the serial killer who targeted men. this is actually, and credit, I have to give credit where credit is due. It is something that I saw my friend Hannah Martin, who is a fabulous writer. She has a few short story published, working on a novel, but she's great. She's here in LA. The first time I ever met her, she was wearing that t-shirt, and I was like the only one who knew what it was, and I was like, yeah, we're going to be friends. Yes. And so now I have my own copy of it.
I love it. It's reminding me, I can't remember what, Emma C. Wells had a really cool shirt and it was a really cool site. I'm going to have to remember what that was. But yeah.
I feel like I'd be friends with her, but I feel like you can't just slide into, I don't know, is it creepy to slide into her DMs and be like, I think we might be soulmates?
I mean, like, just, we can just say that like we were talking about her.
Perfect. There we go. And there's
the vibes,
my end.
And the vibes are definitely, the vibes match.
And I'll be like, and don't listen to the Dark Valentine's podcast episode where I talk about, like, I feel like we're soulmates.
Just skip that one.
Skip that. Don't listen. That's, we're fine.
No, I felt the same way, because when we started talking about, well, she and I had a conversation about being neurodivergent in general before we got to the podcast. So I was doing the same thing. I was like, do we just become best friends? Like,
totally.
Cordelia is like one of my favorite characters ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it'd be weird. I'll just joint DM us or something.
Okay. Well, yeah. Start a like stabby lady crew.
Yes. So we haven't talked in a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
California was on fire. We don't have to get into all of it. But sure. That happened. But we're glad that you're safe.
And thank you.
With us with your feminist shirts.
Thank you. Yes, I'm happy, very happy to be here talking with you. It has been a minute. And yeah, it's LA wildfires, devastating. You know, I have a couple of friends who did lose their homes, lost everything. It's crazy. And just the amount of rebuilding that they're going to have to do. Luckily, I was among the less impacted of the people in terms of like, I didn't have to evacuate. It was scary, but, you know, didn't affect me in that way. Who knows what happened to the air quality for a few days and what that'll do to everyone's long-term life expectancy, but not much you can do about that. So happy to be here. Happy to be chatting with you, and happy the fires are out. yeah. Happy to be breathing.
Maybe it's going to rain today.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're recording on February 6th in case anyone cares about those details like I do sometimes when I'm listening. Sometimes I love when they're like, we're recording this day, and I'm like, ooh, extra information.
Totally. Go to the Farmer's Almanac, see if it actually rained, you know, check it all out.
Have you, I know you said you've been busy, but have you read anything in like the last month or something that you loved?
Yeah, I have actually. And I'm reading one right now that I'm loving. So earlier this year, I read this like crime novel from the 1960s, French crime novel called Trap for Cinderella by Sebastian.
Read it in French.
No. Oh my God.
Okay, I didn't know. I couldn't remember if you spoke French for a second.
Oui, je parle un peu de français, mais pas beaucoup. Pas très bien. Not enough to read a whole novel in yet, although that's like a goal of mine. I could, you know, I could probably manage like the like early readers books, but like not a complex story.
Yeah.
It would be difficult. So I read, so it's called Trap for Cinderella, and it also deals with a fire. This young woman wakes up in a hospital with amnesia, And she's the survivor of this fire in this like villa in the south of France. And she's recognized by like her family nanny as this like really wealthy young woman who has been like disfigured by the fire. So nobody recognizes her, but the young woman was also staying there with her like childhood friend who maybe had like a Mr. Ripley fascination with her. And is maybe like, as she starts to learn more about like who she is like, oh, am I this person or am I the friend? Like, I don't know who I am. Like, I don't know if I'm the victim or if I like set the fire. And like, it's so interesting. And like through the course of the novel, she becomes like the detective, the witness, the victim and the perpetrator, like at different points. It's so interesting and so well done. And it's really short. It's like 180 pages. It's like, and they also just made I shouldn't say just, but I think there's like a 2013 movie adaptation of it. I loved it. It was really great. It was really uniquely done.
That sounds so uniquely vibey.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is. It's really good.
You have the coolest answers.
That's nice of you. And then I'm reading one to review for Ms. Magazine this month called Goddess Complex by Sanjana Satyan. And it's coming out in March. It might be the funniest book I've ever read. It's really well done, but like I am like laughing out loud reading it. And I feel like I shouldn't give a full review until I write the review for Ms. But like, it's just, I'm really enjoying it. It's the story of this young woman who's of Indian descent. And she's married to this man and has kind of been like ambivalent about having children. And then she gets pregnant and realizes like, oh, I'm not ambivalent. I like don't want to have kids. And so she has an abortion. The marriage kind of blows up because of this. And she like moves back to, they had been living in Bombay together. And then she moves back to New York to like be closer to her family and like pursuing her grad program. But what you realize, and then all these really strange things start to occur. She starts to get like texts from like people that she knows in India being like, oh my gosh, congratulations. I just saw you. You're expecting, you're going to have the baby. You're going to be such a wonderful mother. And she's like, what the fuck? Like, no, like I'm not pregnant. I was, but like, I'm not. And you start to realize there might be something surreal going on where there's like another version of her who like kept the baby and is like living in India. It's like, I don't totally know it's so good though. It's really good.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's just so like, has so many interesting things to say about like motherhood from like a millennial woman's perspective that I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. And like, again, there are parts of it that are like some of the funniest things I've ever read. I think it's so hard to write funny and she's killing it.
I know.
Yeah.
Like when I think about that, I'm like, I just feel like humor is so much, it's one of the things that's harder to convey in written word than like TV or movies, I feel
totally,
like.
Totally. Yeah, because you're like, it's not somebody reacting to it or telling you it's funny or it's like, it's so good.
Ooh. I wonder if it's on NetGalley.
I bet it is.
Or for March, but maybe it is.
I bet it is. Afterwards. Yeah. What about you? Are you reading anything good?
So I finished Vantage Point like 2 days ago. I really liked it.
Oh, good. I need to read it. I can't wait to talk about it with you. And like, I went to Sarah's book launch for it. And like, I'm so excited to read it. Yeah. She's great. She's like so smart and also just like the most adorable human alive. Like she's great. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to connect with her for sure because I loved it. The gist of it is, so some of it is like, I've seen her posting about this plot point, but I can't remember if it's in the synopsis. So I'm like, should I say this plot point? I'm not going to say the plot point.
Okay.
So it's basically about the Weiland family or members of this family, the Weilands, who for like generations have been cursed. And in April, a lot of them die in like really not necessarily mysterious, just like sudden circumstances. And a lot of it happens in April. So that's like the curse that their family carries. And so Clara and Teddy are the heirs, basically. Their parents passed in a very gothic way years before. And so they're the remaining Weilands at this point. And then why can't I think of her friend's name? Jess. Clara's friend Jess, they were like friends all through childhood, then married her brother Teddy. So now she's her friend, and she's also though her sister-in-law. So there's a lot of complicated stuff going on there because Teddy has decided to run for Congress. And when he runs for Congress, like shortly after he starts running, a really compromising intimate video is what the synopsis calls it of Clara is leaked online, and then more stuff starts coming out.
Interesting.
And they don't seem like they're real videos, and like they might be deep fakes. So the description says Succession meets Megan Abbott. And like I get that comparison. I would also compare it. Where did it go? I just had it. There was something I would compare it to more. Oh my gosh. Oh, Black Mirror. Like if a Black Mirror episode was like told with some gothic like themes, like they live on this really deserted island in this very large like house or mansion or whatever. So like to me, it felt like a Black Mirror episode with gothic vibes. And it's kind of fun, like using tech, like that's what's really unique about it as a thriller. I haven't written my review, but now I'm just gonna like pull the transcript of this. What's really unique about this one as a thriller is that she managed to like use tech in like tech seems very modern to me and very futuristic, and then gothic always has like an older feel to me, but she managed to like do those two together, and it's pretty cool.
Totally. I'm dying to read it, and hearing her talk about it, like, so I hadn't realized it. Maybe she says this in the book somewhere too. It's actually based on like the first horror novel, like the first like American horror novel that was written in like the 1700s. Yeah. And so she basically like takes it and like updates it in all these different ways and like uses that as the spine. But like, yeah. And so it's so cool kind of like to speak to what you're talking about, where it's like this sort of like very now technology, or technology that's maybe even like 5 minutes in the future from where we are now, to marry to like an older, more gothic story and sensibility.
Yeah. It was good. I feel like it would be a really good movie. I just feel like it would be very fun.
So maybe, we'll yeah, hopefully we'll see it on the big screen or small screen, A screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I started This Book Will Bury Me, because I'm interviewing her at the end of February, so I could finally start it and it would be in my head enough still.
Excellent. What are your thoughts?
Not that I ever
so
forget large parts of her books, but you know what I mean.
Totally. You want it like there. What do you think? I loved that book.
I'm still so much at the beginning. I have not had much time to read in the last 2 days. So I'm still in the first 50 pages. So she's kind of just gotten to the forum. And so I'm like excited. Like everything's about to like pick up, I think.
And I will say, I don't mean this as a criticism at all, because where Ashley Winstead is willing to, it was going to take us, I'm willing to go. There is, as I recall, a fair amount of setup in that book too, where you're sort of like, because she's doing and so many grief. Different things. Yeah, exactly. She's like talking, it's like really about grief, and it's about this other, you know, she finds this thing that makes her feel, and then the like the way she gets more into like the big sort of case that you're like coming up on. But it's, it's so good.
Yeah. So I'm like, I know that I don't know like most of what I'm about to encounter, but I'm like, it's Ashley. So I'm just along for the ride. And her writing is so beautiful, because grief is hard for me in general. I don't think anyone's like loving grief either, but sometimes it's so hard to start off a book in grief, like to get into the story. But her writing about it is so beautiful.
I know. She's such a good writer. She's such a good writer. She's so smart. Like hearing her talk about her work, I'm always like, whoa, like it's like a TED talk, you know, like the stuff she's thinking about and trying to do in her work. It's amazing.
Yeah. Like some of her instincts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you had a cool idea for a topic.
I did have a cool idea for a topic that I also said to you, I don't even know how I interpret this. Let's see what happens. But with Valentine's with Valentine's Day coming up, I thought it might be fun to do. And I know you just put out the romance episode today. I saw on Book Wild Community. But this is a little different. I was calling it a dark Valentine's episode. And I was really kind of inspired by you were the one who told me to watch Strange Darling. And I really loved that movie. And so that's, I was sort of thinking things in that realm that like marries like in some ways this like romantic sensibility with also very dark, dark stuff. And so that's, so I have some picks for us and I'm eager to hear about yours.
Yeah. I like this version. Cause like we had someone for the episode you just mentioned, someone like messaged in and was like, are there thrillers with romance in them? And then we had kind of like a wide array of like, sometimes it was romance and sometimes it was like, well, this is thriller romance, but it had like a mixture. I do feel like this is a different vibe.
Oh, for sure.
I thought about it.
Me too. Cause yeah, I know what you mean. Like in Ashley Winston's books, a lot of her books, they have like elements of like romance in them too. And like, I went like, no, it's gotta be fucked up. Hence my like Eileen Wuornos.
I know.
It's like, we're not looking at romance. That's like, that's like, oh, we solved a murder together and we came together. It's like, this blew up our lives or like, you're the killer, you know, like whatever version it is. Yeah.
Yes. It was cool. Cause then when I went to look for them, I was like, oh, I actually have some that really fit this really well.
Excellent.
Yeah. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I will go first. So my first pick is a book that I have talked about a bajillion times on this podcast. And I think you are maybe familiar with too, and probably a lot of people, but I have to bring it up again. It just came out. Cross My Heart by Megan Collins is to me like a great example of this, where it's really about like the dark places that love can take you is sort of like really the like inspiration for the book. So I will read the little summary, which is Rosie Loughlin wants nothing more than to find the one. A year after she was dumped in her wedding dress, Rosie is working at her parents' bridal salon, anxious for a happy ending that can't come soon enough. As the recipient of a life-saving heart transplant, she knows her health is precious and precarious. She suspects her heart donor is Daphne Thorne, the wife of local celebrity author Morgan Thorne, who she begins messaging via an anonymous service called Donor Connect, ostensibly to learn more about Daphne. But Rosie has a secret. She's convinced that now that she has his wife's heart, she and Morgan are meant to be together. As Rosie and Morgan correspond, the pretense of avoiding personal details soon disappears, even if Rosie's keeping some cards close to her chest. But as she digs deeper into Morgan's previous marriage, she discovers disturbing rumors about the man she's falling for. Could Morgan have had something to do with his late wife's death? And can Rosie's heart sustain another break, or is she next?
This one is perfect.
It's like, it's so good. And it's about like the part of what I loved about this book. I mean, first of all, Megan Collins, just like must read, you know, anything she writes. She's such a beautiful writer. And so like, just goes down so smooth. But like, I loved how much it's about like that sort of, without being too gender essentialist, like female experience of like, when is love going to find me? I've watched the rom-coms. I've seen the things like, I will be complete once I find a man, which not all women believe, nor should we, but just like that is so like a trope that's in there. And it's like, what if we took it to the darkest extension of itself? And perfect.
And then took it a little further.
And then took it a little further, for sure.
He's like, there's a moment where you're like, wow. Yes. That's everything. And then you're like, oh, that's not everything.
Totally. It's so good. And like, I don't really want to talk too much about what I think is so genius in this book, because it's like, there are things I don't want to give away, but like some of what she pulls off in this book, truly spectacular, like, like a high wire ballet act of like writing. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's so good. I think everyone will be talking about this book for a little while. So
I think so too.
It'll make multiple appearances.
Yes.
The first one that I thought of, like, I think before I even had to look through Goodreads, was It Takes Monsters by Mandy McHugh. It is very bloody specifically, kind of bloody Valentine. Not that I'm like an MGK fan, but so this one is about Victoria Tate, who has had enough of her controlling, incompetent husband, Warren. But planning the perfect murder is more difficult than it looks. When the social event of the year, an over-the-top costume ball, is rescheduled for the date she selected for her crime, Victoria has to scramble to make sure she will still be able to follow through. But even hours of listening to crime podcasts cannot prepare her for the next wrench that is thrown in her plans. Warren turns up dead by someone else's hands. Now Victoria finds herself at the center of a murder investigation in which she is actually innocent. The real killer is taunting her, making it clear that they know what she was planning all along. With the police closing in and her neighbors turning on her, Victoria is going to lose everything she had hoped to gain from Warren's death, unless she can figure out who wanted her husband dead and why. It turns out that Warren was better at keeping secrets than she ever could have guessed, but which secret is the one that led to his death? And if she can find the answers, does Victoria have what it takes to confront a real murderer?
Ooh, la la.
Bloody, like, campy. And, like, I think I've talked about it. I love how many, like, pop culture references Mandy puts into all of her books. It's, like, so fun to find them.
Oh, that sounds excellent. I really need to read that. I need to pick that one up. That sounds great.
It's really good. There were a couple scenes that were just, like, seared in my mind that made me think of it first. Ooh. So, yeah, it's fun. It's snarky too. I mean, the woman wants to kill her husband.
I mean, honestly, sounds like a thing I might need to pick up around Valentine's Day. Sounds great.
Yes. Yes, you should.
I definitely will.
This came out on my birthday in 2023.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. When's your birthday? Do we say on the podcast?
October 17th.
October 17th. Okay. I will remember that. Very cool. Nice.
You don't have to, but yeah,
I will.
Just the random things that cross, like, take my attention.
So I know what you mean. I do that too. Like, if I read about a historical figure and they're on my birthday, I'm like, oh, and like, as if we have some sort of connection, you know? Like,
Eminem has the same birthday as me, and I'm like, oh my gosh,
I see it. You two are very similar.
We have our similarities.
I'm just kidding. Okay, my next pick, I'll move us along from that, is a book called To Die For by Joyce Maynard that came out in the 90s. Yes, so this book is I'll explain what it's about in a second, but I will also say a couple of things. It's based on a true life murder in which this woman got involved with these like high school kids and was having an affair with one of them and convinced them to kill her husband for her, being like, we could be together. But it was this kind of group of kids that she kind of like entrances. I don't remember what her name was. I want to say it's like Pamela something or other. Pamela Smart. If I pulled that out from just like the recesses of my brain, I'm going to be very impressed with myself. Maybe
American woman who's convicted of being an accomplice to first degree murder.
Yep.
And witnessed tampering in the death of her husband.
I know my lady killers. And it's also was made into a movie in the mid 90s starring Nicole Kidman. And in my opinion, I think it's Nicole Kidman's best performance ever. And it's great. And it's got a very young Joaquin Phoenix in it. It's got Matt Dillon. Like, it's a great watch. It's on the Criterion Channel right now, streaming this month, if anybody's interested. But it's, let's see. It's written in a unique documentary style too. And I had forgotten that until I'm reading this just now, which is like for anybody who liked The Favourites or By Lane Fargo or Daisy Jones and the Six, but you're like, more murder, please. This might be a good one. So it's
more murder, please.
More murder, please. In a brilliant, shocking novel of ambition and sexual obsession, Joyce Maynard tells the chilling story of a young woman who arranges the cold-blooded murder of her husband. Written in a unique documentary style, To Die For exposes with disturbing accuracy a community for whom television is more real than their own lives. Suzanne Stone is a golden girl, her family's favorite, a lively, accomplished young woman with one driving ambition: to be a network anchorwoman, a television star. The job she lands at a local cable station is merely an unexpected stepping stone to the big time. What is unexpected is her husband's murder. As those around the case and Suzanne herself start talking to the media, a fascinating picture of seduction and fixation emerges. Has Suzanne promised a 16-year-old boy unlimited sex to shoot her husband? Why would three teenagers become pawns in a depraved plot to kill? The people closest to Suzanne see her as a role model, a woman striving to become like her television idols. Others see her as a self-centered, cold-hearted manipulator, a woman who considers the media celebrity that follows her husband's murder a career opportunity. Who Suzanne really is and what impels a young boy to swear he will not only die for the woman he thinks he loves, but will kill for her, combined to form this riveting novel of sexual and psychological domination. Wow. Highly recommend. I think you would love it, Kate, like truly. I think you would love the movie because it's all about like celebrity and like what gets like traction in America. And I will say, I think reading it from a 2025 sensibility, you're like, I don't know if we have to be like, an ambitious woman is definitely a killer, but like, it's still really good. It's still like a great read. Oh, and the movie is like, Nicole Kidman is unbelievable in the film.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This is like, this is some real backlist. I wonder if maybe we'll choose it for our book club, but we'll see. I'll
should bring if it you- up. If you do, I would love to be part of that conversation because I have a lot to say about this book and the movie.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm gonna make a note of that to bring it up. I love this. This is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my next book is The Close-Up by Pip Drysdale, who I just interviewed recently. So also... Mm-hmm. If it sounds kind of good to you, you can go listen to that episode. But this one gets bloody too. Mm-hmm. When Zoe Ann Wise moves to Los Angeles to pursue her dream of becoming a writer, her whole future is wide open. But then Zach, the bartender and aspiring actor she's falling for, ghosts her. Her debut novel, a thriller, fails, and she has writer's block worse than ever before. Now, 3 years later, Zach is famous and Zoe is not. She's facing her 30th birthday, a dead-end job at a flower shop, and a demanding agent, terrified she'll never get her life back on track. But when she goes to make a flower delivery and Zach is at the address, it's like no time has passed at all. They start casually dating in secret, her writer's block disappears, and Zoe begins to feel Zach inspired her first novel, so why can't he inspire her second? But then the inevitable happens and photos are leaked, landing Zoe in the press. Her first novel goes viral, and now everyone seems to know her name, except the problem with everyone knowing your name is that everyone knows your name, including the mysterious stalker obsessed with Zach, a stalker who begins reenacting violent events from Zoe's book step by step against her.
Oh,
snap. I forgot how long that synopsis was and how many things are going on.
Oh, it sounds great, though. And I was also just like, yeah, aspiring actor who goes swimming in Los Angeles. I can relate.
You're like, cool, okay.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying I hope he winds up murdered at the end of the novel, but I'm just saying I'm open to this possibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't say anything, but okay. Yeah, the violent events that they start reenacting fit a very dark Valentine theme.
Oh God, I gotta read that one. That's like right up my alley too, like set in LA and like, yeah.
I also have it. I could send it to you. If you like nice prefer you. Physical versions.
That's nice of you. We'll talk offline.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Very nice. So my next one is, and I just have my advanced reader's copy, which I had zero chill. I saw this book announced and I ran to her Instagram and I said, pretty please, may I have a copy of this? And she was like, is this how it's done? And I was like, no, it's quite rude of me to just be like, give me a copy of your book, but I'm dying to read it. So it's More Than You'll Ever Know by Katie Gutierrez, which you've read it.
I love this book.
It's so good. It's so good. It's so and good. I would say in some ways, it's like one of my more... Like, it's definitely, like, dark and, like, the dark forces of romance, but it's, like, it's a little kinder than some of these books. It's really, like, it's a little more grounded.
It's a little more grounded,
yes. Yeah, and it's, so the story of, it's kind of inner woven narratives. In 2017, this young woman, Cassie Bowman, is a true crime writer, and she's looking for kind of her next big hit to like write an article or a podcast about. And I think, and she basically finds the story of this woman, Dolores Rivera, who was leading a double life. She was married to a man in San Antonio, Texas, and had kids. And she was also traveling for work and winds up married to another man in Mexico City. So in 1980, so the story takes place in the 80s, and it's like she's a female bigamist, which is like also fascinating, and kind of is a fascinating, the story goes between 2017 where Cassie's interviewing Dolores and then back to the 80s where you're seeing what's happened, that like, how did she come to be this woman married to two men and what happens? And there's like a very fatal confrontation that leads to somebody's death over this. And it just, it's such a beautiful book, and like felt like so interesting. Like it's
so much about family too, like hardcore about family, more than you'd expect going into it.
Totally. So much about family. And then also too, like she almost gets to live these two different lives in these two different marriages. Like in one, she's like the mom that she always expected to be and is married to like her childhood sweetheart. And the other one is like about her as like an older woman who's like got this thriving career, and she marries this man in Mexico City, and it's a little more adventurous. And she like has, how do you, like, you can see in a weird way why both appeal to her. And like, yes, it's so good.
It's so believable. Like you understand and believe how much she loves both of them. It's kind totally. Of, it's wild.
Right.
I remember, I think this was one that I got in Taylor Jenkins Reid's newsletter. I think, cause I had a similar experience where I think it's that. And did you hear about Kitty Carr? I think those were the two where like they were in her email newsletter, and I like ran to NetGalley and I was like, please, can I have this?
Yeah, totally.
But like, if you, it's another one where like, this actually is a good comp for Evelyn that I feel like you don't see as often too, because it also just like explores so much of like the multifaceted experience of women and like how at different times in their lives, getting to be both meant like making drastic changes sometimes, and or in her case having two husbands at the same time. So
totally,
that part's fascinating if you really love those stories.
You're right. I've never thought of it as a comp for Evelyn Hugo, but I think you're right in that way. It's like really about like women's interiority, and like it also takes you, it is historical because part of it's set in the 80s, which is so funny that that's considered historical, but it is. That kind of takes you into like 1980s Mexico City and San Antonio is like not a thing you see in literature as much. And I loved it.
Yeah. I remember Googling, like the places in the city so much, like some books, like it really becomes so much a part of the book that I'm even like Googling it and trying to see it all. And I was like minorly obsessed with the city for like a couple weeks.
Totally. I'm dying to go to Mexico City.
Yes. Yeah. I loved that book. There's so much to talk about with it, but I don't want to spoil anything because cool how it's like a family saga. And then there is like the thriller kicks in a lot at the end, basically.
Yes, it does. For sure.
So that part is cool. The way that she did all of that too. My next one, I have no segue, but
none needed.
Another bloody one. House of Hunger by Alexis Henderson. It is just a really unique book. So Marion Shaw has been raised in the slums, where want and deprivation is all she knows. Despite longing to leave the city and its miseries, she has no real hope of escape until the day she spots a peculiar listing in the newspaper seeking a blood maid. Though she knows little about the far north, where wealthy nobles live in luxury and drink the blood of those in their service, Marion applies to the position. In a matter of days, she finds herself the newest blood maid at the notorious House of Hunger. There, Marion is swept into a world of dark debauchery, and at the center of it all is her. Countess Lizaveta, who presides over this hedonistic court, is loved and feared in equal measure, but she takes a special interest in Marion. Lisavette is magnetic and Marion is eager to please her new mistress. But when her fellow bloodmates begin to go missing in the night, Marion is thrust into a vicious game of cat and mouse. She'll need to learn the rules of her new home fast, or its halls will soon become her grave.
Ooh, this is like, I love it.
Sapphic kind of vampire fantasy thriller and gothic vibes all in one.
I've heard of this book before. You might have even mentioned it before. And yeah. Every time I hear it, I'm like, yeah, I gotta read that.
No, I kept having that experience because I would like recommend it. I'm like, I need to read it.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah.
Ooh. But her other one, Academy for Liars, I'm not gonna get into it because I have talked about that one a lot. But that one would qualify as well.
Okay. So,
if anyone's interested, that one is like the psychological dark magic of like persuasion and mind control. But there's a lot of blood and a lot of debauchery in it too.
Oh, I gotta read it. I gotta read both of them. I do remember you talking about Academy of Liars, and it's just like,
oh yeah,
so many books, so little time, you know.
I know.
Yeah, it is. Well, excellent. I don't have a segue either. Segueless. But my next one is Kill for Love by Laura Picklesheimer. Yes. Have you read it?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. Like the way I describe it is kind of like feminist Patrick Bateman vibes, like very American Psycho kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's set in LA, and it's the little synopsis is, as a fifth year sorority student at a major university in Los Angeles, Tiffany is juggling a busy schedule of commitments that includes shopping, fitness, self-care, and socials. She is one of the most beautiful and popular young women on Greek Row. She's also one of the cleverest, though no one really cares about that. And yet she chooses to strategically fail in order to avoid the real world. As her final year of college begins, Tiffany finds herself haunted by nightmares of fire and destruction, a post-grad life with nothing to offer her, and increasingly sadistic impulses, which is really where the book like goes pretty quickly. Is like,
yes.
After a frat party hookup devolves into a bloody fatal affair, Tiffany realizes something within her has finally awoken, the insatiable desire to kill. As Tiffany's bloodlust deepens and the bodies of attractive young men pile up, she must contend with mounting legal scrutiny, social media-fueled competing murders, and her growing relationship with Weston, who she is starting to believe could be the perfect boyfriend and her only shot at redemption. And it's great. It's so dark and so funny and voicey, and just like she goes there.
Very bloody.
And like, she does something in here that I really love that I'm going to talk about, because like, for some reason, Tiffany is like in particular only drawn to like blonde men. And it's so interesting because it's this like inversion of this trope that like from Hitchcock on, where it's like these blonde women who die in beautifully like painful ways. And she's just like murdering blonde dudes. And I'm like, yeah, I get it, Tiffany. Like,
yes.
Close the murder gap, you know?
No, kill some blonde dudes.
Yeah.
Go roast for them.
Yeah.
And like all the jokes about it. Like, I don't know why, but I see more jokes on like book talk. Of people who are like, when they find out he's blonde, when they're like reading a book and they're like, nope, he's not.
That was definitely how I felt. And then I saw the Alexander Skarsgård in True Blood, and I was like,
that's a fair point.
Maybe.
Leah Woodall, I think, was one where I was like, okay, I think he's blonde.
Like, we can so deal now with I think
he's like mainly who I imagine, or Joe Alwyn, which is so random, but like he works for a lot of stuff.
Just like every blonde man is Joe Alwyn, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Or Leah Woodall.
Yep.
Oh man, that's good. Well, my next one, it's like, it's not, but I also still feel like it does fit the vibes.
Okay.
But it's The Last Party by A.R. Torrey.
Yes.
It is so dark, and it is related to relationships. Like, it does count, but the synopsis might not sound like it. Perla Waltz lives with her husband Grant and their precious daughter Sophie in a gated Pasadena community. Affluent, sociable, and accomplished, Perla plays the part of loving wife and mother to perfection. It seems an ideal life, if not for a decades-old crime that has become Perla's dark and consuming secret obsession. 23 years ago, Leawood Fulcrum confessed to murdering two young girls during a birthday party. Though he's been condemned to a life sentence, his crime is not forgotten, not by Perla, nor by an inquisitive doctoral student interviewing Fulcrum for his dissertation. He's getting the killer to open up about his motives, his confession, and the truth of what really happened on that horrible night. As the past and present entwine, the deceptions behind the infamous murder begin to surface. But who's deceiving who now and why? And as an ingeniously twisted plan is set in motion, who will be the next to die?
Ooh.
This was one of the darkest books I read last year. It's dark. It's very dark. It's not. I don't think any of these are for the faint of heart, but
that's true. All of our books should have trigger warnings here.
Yeah.
But that sounds so good. And I have seen that book everywhere on social media, and I still haven't picked it up just because it
lives up to the hype. Oh my God.
And also just like all the books behind me that need to be read. I know. But,
Garen and Steph had both read it and talked about it and how good it was. And I was like, I just have to read it. And the second I was in it, it was one of those ones where you're like, can I cancel everything I'm doing and just finish this?
I got to check it out.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's high on my list. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I'm excited to see too how it like might fit the theme, because you're right. The premise of it doesn't necessarily sound like Dark Valentine, but I believe you.
It is. It fits. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. My next one, I have two more. My next one is My Husband by Maud Ventura.
I've seen this one.
It's great. And also funny, my lipstick matches. The winner, the narrator, I don't know that she even has a name. I think she might be just like nameless. But it's at 40 years old, she has an enviable life, stunning looks, a beautiful house in the suburbs, a job she likes, two healthy children, and most important, an ideal husband whose wealthy background allows her to transcend her own social class. After 15 years together, she is still besotted with him, but she's never quite sure whether her passion is reciprocated. Determined to keep their relationship perfect, she meticulously prepares for every encounter they have, always taking care to make her actions seem effortless. She watches him attentively, charting every mistake and punishing him accordingly to help him improve. And she tests him, setting traps to make sure that he still loves her just as much as he did when they first met. Until one day she realizes she may have gone too far. And this is a French book in translation, and it won France's first novel prize. It's probably marketed more as straight, like just lit literature genre, but it really is like, to me, has all the elements of a psychological thriller in there too. This woman who's got this like carefully charted system for measuring how much her husband loves her and trying to make sure he loves her enough. And like, I read it and it felt so uncomfortable because I recognized myself, like not fully in this, but like in the sort of like anxious, like, does he love me enough? Like I have been that person in relationships and reading it, I was just like, oh my God, but it's so good.
It reminds me, I haven't read it, but what you just described reminds me of how in therapy, when we talked about anxious attachment means thinking the last interaction you had like colors the entire relationship's feeling. And I was like, that is such a good way to put it, where like you're constantly like, did that change everything? That change everything?
Totally.
So it sounds like that. Like
this is like the book about like anxious attachment that I have ever read in fiction form. It's like great. It's so good. Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Because that's like a, I don't know if I'll keep it in, but that's like, it's how I learned to navigate my parents. Mm. So then that, of course, that's then what I brought into my 20s when I was in therapy, was like, am I doing all of the things right? Did I forget something?
Totally. And like, if I don't do this, will somebody stop loving me? Like, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Can identify. Funny. Yeah.
Interesting. And I love all of your French influence that you're bringing.
I know. Here. I guess it's like, it feels appropriate for the Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
You know, for l'amour français style.
Yes. Well, I have a European one. I mean, it takes place in Europe, but I have talked about this one so much. Like, I feel like I've brought it up for multiple subjects, but that's probably because it combines so many things. But It Had to Be You by Eliza Jane Brazier is like just so perfect for this one. It's so couldn't not talk about it.
Yes.
But since I really have talked about it so much, like, it's about Eva and Jonathan, and they're basically two strangers who hook up on a train from Florence to Paris, and they have like all this sexual chemistry, and they're like, I'm never going to see this person again. And then they're both assassins, and they get their marks are each other, like the next kills that like both of them get. And so then there's like sexy cat and mouse all across Europe trying to see who is going to outwit who. And it's so much fun. It's just really fun.
It's such a fun book. I love that book too. It's very, like Mr. and Mrs. Smith meets like Before Sunset, and like, just so like, so fun. I imagine that her experience writing that was just very like,
I know,
joyful too.
I agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree. She's so cool too.
She's so cool. I've met her a couple of times. She's like got her horses and like,
I know,
rad. She's amazing. And like that book is like so fun. So fun.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I need to get a physical copy.
Yes. I know. I have one behind me somewhere.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, figure it out. No, it's somewhere. Oh, it's a great one. That's
one more.
I do have one more.
Go ahead. I'm just nervous for your dog walk.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. Yes.
No, not in a bad way.
No. I get it. And it's that dog that was like, I was babysitting that time when we were doing the thing. And I
had
like,
the like skeleton in his mouth, or the skull.
The skull. And I'm like chasing him around trying to get him to like drop it. And I was like negotiating a hostage situation.
Oh my God.
So my final pick is not really a thriller, although it has thriller elements to it. And it's got like such a great cover. And like, honestly, it's so good. Vladimir by Julia May Jonas. Have you read this one?
No, I just really, I've heard you talk about it.
Yes. And it's so, when I was a child, I loved old men, and I could tell that they also loved me. And so we meet our deliciously incisive narrator, a popular English professor whose charismatic husband at the same small liberal arts college is under investigation for inappropriate relationships with his former students. The couple had long maintained a comfortable understanding when it came to extramarital pursuits, but with these allegations, life has become far less comfortable for them both. And when our narrator finds herself alarmingly infatuated with Vladimir Vladinsky, a celebrated young novelist newly arrived on campus, their tinderbox world comes dangerously close to exploding. And so that's so funny. That is like, that is the premise, but like, I don't think it's anything to give it away because it happens in the first couple of pages. You find out that our narrator, who's like maybe in her 50s or something, has taken this young man that she's sexually obsessed with hostage and is holding him at like their cabin, and he's like chained up, and she's like, what am I gonna do with you now? Like, uh-oh.
Yes. And I knew there was something like wild to this one.
That's like how it starts. And then it goes back and it tells the story of her marriage with her husband, who has been like doing gross things where, you know, he's like been having affairs with young women, but it like, and she's kind of always turned a blind eye to it. But then this young woman comes forward and is like, actually, he like harassed me and pressured me. And she has this like mixed reaction to it. And like, and then at the same time has this blossoming like attraction, but like obsession with this, this young man on campus. And it is a weird and wild ride, and like so voicey, and like, it's so good.
It sounds like an, even more R-rated Tell Me Lies kind of situation.
For sure.
Like a little higher stakes, but some of the same like things going on campus.
Yeah, definitely. And like from a slightly different perspective where it's like, you know, she and her husband, she's sort of living in this generation of like you know, older. She's a consenting young woman. She doesn't necessarily see it the same way we might, where it's like, she might have been quote unquote consenting, but also like, he's older. Did he groom her? Like all these other things. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like, basically like, women didn't whine about it in my day and age. But like, you can also tell that there's like other stuff under there that she's like trying to like reckon with. And it like all right. leads to her kidnapping this dude.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing.
I mean, it's a premise. I think you definitely want to know, especially if that's like in the first few chapters, like yes. it's worth putting it out there. Totally. I feel like that captures the right audience.
For sure. And that's kind of why I lead with it, is because I feel like mm-hmm. the summary is good, but you would read the yeah. summary and I would think it's so sort of like quiet of campus right. novel about like people having affairs and stuff, and it's like, oh no, like we start with a bang, like it's we're on like it's off, yeah, it's off to the races.
Mm-hmm. Damn, yeah, I need to read this one too. Mm-hmm. There's just so much to read. The conclusion of every episode.
I know, it really is. And then every time I talk to you, it gets longer.